He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider for Clutch Points. Today on the show, we will be talking about whatever you want to talk about. It's Sunday, which means we are recording our weekly mailbag. You guys have asked so far on iTunes about JJ Redick and where he's been this summer. He's been very, very quiet on that front. You guys are still wondering about the Lakers trade options and specifically on the wing. So we'll talk a little bit about that. There's some questions on Twitter about LeBron James's future and this Clippers situation as well, obviously. So we will be talking about everything that you guys want to talk about. I'll also obviously over the course of the show, take questions from the live audience here on YouTube. And if you guys aren't watching on YouTube or haven't checked out the show on YouTube, you can find it there at youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys prefer to listen to it in its podcast form, you can find it everywhere that you find podcasts, preferably on Spotify. Spotify is okay, but preferably on Odyssey, because I'm a company man. And we'll go ahead and dive on into your guys' questions. There it is. All right, so the first question that we have here from Kush Corleone, who writes, you said something in one of the pods about how JJ's silence is actually sort of funny considering he was on every airwave and all over socials prior to getting the gig. I found myself all summer hoping to get something from JJ, but now as we near the end of the offseason and training camp starts soon, I've actually embraced that JJ has been MIA all summer. It makes me think back to that commercial he has where he's being this mad, evil scientist. I'm hoping that's what he's doing actually after some downtime with family, of course. Obviously, the Lakers have Greg St. Jean out there with Luka, but to what degree do you think Greg and JJ are discussing some successful sets, plays, and actions that Savinia used with Luka to bring back to the Lakers? Great questions. All right. I'll start with I would have liked to heard a little bit more from JJ Redick. Now it's kind of tough because coaches don't really speak much during the off season. JJ is a little unique, obviously, in that he was a former podcaster and he did Zach Lowe's show last off season. Right. And in that show, he gave the starting lineup that he was going to go with. So, he was in a lot more places on a lot more platforms last year. I kind of sort of think he got a little bit of a humble pie in that playoff series where I thought he really struggled. It's not that I was hoping to hear, from JJ Redick and have him bend the knee and beg us for forgiveness, for that performance and stuff. I didn't anticipate that. He's not really wired that way. But I did think it was kind of interesting that, he wasn't even there at the beginning of Summer League. You would think this guy who was hired for being a basketball sicko, considers himself and calls himself a basketball sicko, would have been there for the basketball at the onset of Summer League there. I'm going to be honest. I think he could have been there to do a little bit more learning and stuff, given how little experience he has in that gig. I wouldn't care that he gave, a presser or an interview during the Las Vegas Summer League. That doesn't really matter much to me. But, the word out there was that he was on vacation at the beginning of Summer League. And it's like, wait, so are you or are you not a basketball sicko? Because if I'm going to drag my happy ass all the way out to Vegas in that summer heat and go and watch all of the that honestly bad basketball. I kind of think the head coach of the Lakers should be out there for that. And it was a weird look when all of that went down. But yeah, like to answer the actual question, does it matter that he hasn't spoken? No, it doesn't matter. Like it really, really doesn't matter. He actually kind of falls in line with how the Lakers have basically operated under Rob Pelinka, where if things are good, you see and hear a lot of the Lakers and a lot of Rob Pelinka. And then when things aren't so good, you do not hear or see Rob Pelinka very much. So, you know, they got embarrassed in that first round series. And, you know, the whole organization kind of went into their shell, and they're waiting to you know, have a little bit more good news before they, I think, make themselves more available. And we're not going to get any such news until the start of the season. So we'll probably get, you know, obviously there's a media day that is coming. Can't wait to hear from JJ there to ask him, you know, what he's kind of learned over the summer and how he thinks of that playoff series and all of that good stuff. And then, you know, you get what you get from training camp and you get what you get from preseason games. And then you see where JJ is at heading into the season. He is, quite frankly, one of the biggest variables going into next year, because I thought he had a really, really good regular season last year, and then had a really, really bad postseason last year. And you can kind of see the impact on a team when your coach is really, really good or really, really bad. So the Lakers need him to take a really big step forward using that experience he had last year. And if he doesn't, you know, he's not a Luka hire. So and the group that just bought the Lakers, they aren't going to care about, you know, head coach salaries that just kind of sit there on the books while they look to find the head coach that they actually want. After this season, JJ will have 2 years left on his contract, and this is going to be a bit of an audition for him. And we'll see if he, you know, how ready he is to handle that kind of pressure, because to this point, he's been kind of this media darling until he wasn't. Right. Until that series didn't go very well, until he started to get snippy anytime anybody questioned anything he ever did. And if he doesn't handle those situations a little bit better, and if he doesn't grow to the extent that the Lakers need him to grow this season, that rubber's going to meet the road real, you know, a lot faster than I think, you know, anybody, like rubber typically hits road faster than people expect. But in this case specifically, with the head coach, as the organization transitions from a LeBron team to a Luka team, not saying that Luka doesn't like JJ Redick, but this is one of those gigs that, you know, it's going to be high pressure. It's going to be even higher pressure. And until we get, you know, a fuller look at who JJ Redick is as a head coach, you know, we'll just kind of cross our fingers and hope he figures it out. Whoop. I thought that was weird. All right. Well, that was awkward. Second half of that question is interesting as far as like the Slovenia Lakers connection here. So obviously Greg St. Jean was in, you know, at Eurobasket with Slovenia, spent a lot of time with Luka, you know, throughout that tournament. I did notice a few sets that Slovenia was running that the Lakers also run. I also think it's just really good for Greg St. Jean to get out there and experience different kinds of basketball. This guy is essentially in charge of the Lakers offense strategically. So any amount of growing that he can undergo as well will also really help. As far as like things that Slovenia was doing that I would like to see the Lakers do, Raj and I talked about this a little bit, but Slovenia did a really good job of moving Luka Doncic around the court and presenting him different angles to attack, presenting the opposing defense with different situations that they had to deal with Luka. One thing specifically that Slovenia did a lot more of than the Lakers did last year, or at least it felt that way. I don't know what the stats say or whatever, but Slovenia put Luka in the post and in the pinch post, and they basically used him as that fulcrum of the offense that the Lakers used Anthony Davis as at various moments last year. So before obviously the trade. And I thought the Lakers looked really good with Anthony Davis as that fulcrum of the offense. I would like to see the Lakers put Luka in those spots. Like, this was always one of my favorite things that Phil would do with Kobe, where he would put Kobe in that like pinch post or high post area, sometimes low post, depending on the positioning that Kobe would get. But when you have, my whole house is getting sick. You guys can kind of hear it in my voice. When you have a player as good as Kobe, a dribble away from the basket, it puts the defense in an absolutely impossible spot. And by that, I mean a dribble, you know, his dribble is still live. He hasn't used his dribble yet. And if he is one dribble or so away from the basket, that gives zero time whatsoever for the defense to help and viably send help. Because, you know, if Kobe can get all the way to the basket with the one dribble, just imagine what other damage he could possibly do with that one dribble. And given how good Kobe was in the mid range, it was just a freaking bear to try to deal with Kobe in those spots. And I think Luka is very much the same kind of way. LeBron's also this way too, where both of those guys are so big that they can just kind of overwhelm the defense and force their way into whatever spot on the court that they want to get to. And they when you're a dribble or so away and all you need to do is gain, you know, get your shoulder just barely by your defender, and at the very least, you're getting to the free throw line. The defense has to warp itself to try to be in a spot where they can more viably help. And that's where you start to see those skip passes. And this is, again, where Luka and LeBron's size comes into play here. It's like the one thing with Anthony Davis, he got better with it over the course of his time with the Lakers. But the thing with Anthony Davis that always kind of frustrated me, and we talked about it a lot here while he was a Laker, but it was the inconsistent shoulder angle that he would have when he was operating as that fulcrum. So if he would get a double and his shoulder would start to dip way back here like this, it just made it really hard for him to throw that pass over the top with any kind of force. Well, Luka and LeBron are both excellent at, you know, maintaining the right type of poise and the right type of posture to be able to put, you know, to throw that skip pass over the top of whatever trap or help or whatever, and get it to the weak side of the court with speed that allows the shooter or the swing decision maker to be able to, you know, have that much more time making their decision. So having Luka in that pinch post or in the low post or basically just giving him the ball in different areas of the court, I thought Slovenia did a good job with that, and I hope that's something that Greg St. Jean was paying close attention to so that he can help bring that approach to the Lakers, not just with Luka, but also with LeBron. I think that would go a long way in adding another element to an offense, a Lakers offense that, again, has to be overwhelming. We got a super comment here right as I was finishing that last comment. So let's go ahead and play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! All right. Comment here comes from John Drake, who writes, other than Wiggins, what player or two would you like to see the Lakers add? I don't think Gabe or Maxi add anything. So, I mean, this is tough, right? Because, like, who would I like to see the Lakers add? Giannis. That would be nice. Who would I like to see the Lakers add realistically, right? That's a very different question. And you know, we kind of talked about it in last show. I think it was on Friday's show. At the end of it, when I was answering your guys' questions, and basically the task is look at teams that have convinced themselves, maybe, just maybe, we can go out and win ourselves enough games to maybe get a play-in spot, or, you know, teams that, you know, are looking around, like Eastern Conference teams here come to mind, where they're looking around and they're saying, man, this conference is a mess. You know, we could probably sneak into an actual playoff spot, not even play-in spot. And then reality hits them, right? In the West, you're going to have a few of these teams where, like, Dallas comes to mind, where I'm looking at their roster and there's a lot of guys on that roster that I like, but I don't like them in the way that they're going to have to be used this season because of the amount of overlap on that roster. And in this Western Conference, there is just not the margin for error to make those things work. So, you know, like, unless you really, really believe that D'Angelo Russell is going to, you know, keep things afloat and help get Dallas, or keep Dallas within striking range of an actual playoff spot, or play-in spot, until or if Kyrie Irving comes back, like, I think there's a possibility that, you know, Dallas is, I haven't looked at their schedule yet, but if, like, Dallas starts the season and things just aren't going in the way that they thought they were going to go, then do they start selling off pieces to make themselves cheaper, right? They're going to be a very expensive team. Are they going to start selling off pieces to, you know, get themselves a head start on the Cooper Flag timeline and the Derek Lively timeline? Are they going to continue to believe that Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving, two guys who, like, you know, they won with LeBron James and they won as LeBron's second best player, but neither guy have, you know, really done very much as their team's best player. And again, Kyrie Irving might not even play this year. So, like, a team like Dallas, does Daniel Gafford become available at some point this season? Does Max Christie become, well, Max Christie fits the Cooper Flag timeline, so maybe not. But does PJ Washington become available? They have Najee, right? So, like, does Zeke Najee become available there? Because there's just so much overlap across that roster. You know, Cooper Flag isn't being moved. You know, Derek Lively isn't being moved. Anthony Davis probably isn't being moved, and you probably don't have the assets to get him. You don't really want to trade for Kyrie Irving because I don't know what he's going to look like. That knee injury looked brutal. So, but, like, with Dallas, like, I think it's altogether possible, if not likely, that Dallas starts the season thinking, all right, guys, we have enough here to go out and do X, Y, or Z, and then kind of realize very quickly, yeah, D'Angelo Russell's our only point guard. That's right. That's why that was a mistake. And we'll see what kind of decisions come of that kind of a situation. You could say the same thing about Portland. You could say, you could say the same thing about, you know, any number of teams: Portland, Sacramento, Phoenix. You could look at the Eastern Conference, and Charlotte comes to mind. I'm really curious what happens with Miami. Right, I know that John is asking here about players other than Wiggins. But Wiggins is eventually going to be at the center of trade rumors, basically at the onset of the season, especially if Miami doesn't start quickly. Brooklyn, right? They are a team that has cap space, so that allows the Lakers to do some things. And could you trade, you know, Maxey or Gabe, that expiring, and, like, a second rounder for Haywood Highsmith, and give yourself that much more breathing room from the first apron, right? I believe the Lakers are hard cap below the first apron. could you give yourself a little bit more breathing room that way? So, I think, you know, like Jordan Goodwin is on a contract. He's on a veteran minimum contract in Phoenix, right? And if the Lakers decide that they want to go out and get one of their better point of attack defenders from last year, do they, you know, call up Phoenix at some point and see what's going on there? Utah, right? Utah's another team where they're probably too talented to tank. They've already tried to get less talented. Do they continue those efforts? And if so, does Walker Kessler make that much sense given how many centers that they have on that team? So, and look, like, does it make sense for the Lakers to trade for a Walker Kessler given what his price has been to this point when they already have DeAndre Ayton? Maybe not, but like my point here is that, you know, with like where the offseason is right now, this is basically what every team is going to be heading into opening night. Maybe you see another flurry after the Jonathan Kuminga thing is figured out. Like Golden State literally has to employ enough players to field an NBA roster. So we know that they're going to sign, you know, a few guys on the other side of whatever Jonathan Kuminga's decision is. But yeah, like after that, you know, do the Lakers look to make that consolidation trade that I was talking about or that I reported about a few weeks ago? Do they finally do that with a better idea of who the other free agents are going to be out there? So like Malcolm Brogdon just signed a non-guaranteed contract. That dude is good. Like that guy's a good basketball player. And he's on a prove-it deal. Amir Coffey got a training camp deal. That guy's legit good. So there are still reasons for the Lakers to make their roster cheaper, give themselves a little bit more breathing room under that first apron, and potentially add more usable talent. I think one thing that the Lakers are kind of keeping an eye, that one reason that the Lakers didn't basically just move Maxey for anything is because if Maxey does have anything left in the tank, and I kind of doubt he does, but if he has anything whatsoever left in the tank, that's an important piece of a modern roster. That floor spacing big, who can rebound and understands how to play with Luka, like that's an important piece that most teams would probably like to have. And so, like, if you're the Lakers, it might have made sense to hold on to Maxey this summer rather than, you know, because there was some talk that you needed to include a second rounder to get off of his contract. If that's the case, then I would rather just keep Maxey Kleba. So, yeah, I would say that even if it's a protected second rounder, like if Maxey plays and looks even remotely playable, that all of a sudden turns him from an expiring salary that you needed to attach even a protected second rounder to get rid of to either a rotation player, which I'm really, really doubtful of again. Or if not a rotation player, does some team, are they more willing to take on his contract now that they've seen him play? His contract literally becomes cheaper over the course of the season. Is that, you know, that we know that would be a factor as well. So, yeah, I think, you know, to answer the question as far as like, you know, which specific player, I could go through a list and maybe one of these shows this week, I could put together an actual list of trade targets. But to me, it's a more interesting practice to basically go through what it would take for the Lakers to be able to make the kind of move that John was asking about. Let's see. So Michael Dang writes, what percent chance do you think this is LeBron's last year? Before contract negotiations, I thought it was 20%. Now he thinks 70% likely that it's his last year. It's year 23, the Jordan year. LeBron also wears 23. No contract option for the first time ever. Must be tough to announce it's his last year and try to win a tip. Oh, a chip. I see. All right. So as far as like what percent chance do I think it's LeBron's last year? I actually don't think it's going to be his last year. And if we do find out it's his last year, he's definitely making the announcement and getting all of the fanfare on his way out, probably filming a documentary on his way out as well. Percent chance, I would say it's like, I would say in that 10 to 20% chance range that, you know, that LeBron hangs him up after this season. I honestly think that he was kind of offended by how little motion he got after, because I thought at the time that he was kind of soft launching a trade request. And if that was what he was doing, no team fell over themselves basically to do whatever they could to bring him in. So like, I think LeBron was kind of offended by the fact that nobody did anything to go out and get him. And from his standpoint, he's like, all right, I, for the first time in LeBron's career, really, you know, he's being legitimately doubted by the rest of the league by that lack of motion there. So I'm really curious to see what LeBron looks like this season. And that's why, it's why I've been hesitant to trade him. And look, I heard it over the offseason that not only did everybody I talked to say that LeBron is going to be a Laker at the beginning of the year, but I also heard from quite a few players, people over the course of the year who were saying like, yeah, LeBron's probably just going to sign a 1-year deal after this one, maybe for a little cheaper, with it being his last season, give himself a chance at winning a championship and you know, finishing his career that way, winning a championship on the same team as Bronny in LA, right? The city that he wants to be in because it has him, you know, puts him closer to his family. So, yeah, as far as like LeBron's future goes, I think it is still with the Lakers. Like I don't think he's going anywhere. Now, I will say this. I've always said this over the course of LeBron's career. And this started back when he left Cleveland the second time. The only people who are the most wrong about LeBron's decisions and intentions and stuff like that, the only way that you can be outright wrong about LeBron is to have a hardline opinion on what you think that he's going to do. To me, he's always valued optionality. He likes to keep people on their toes. And I'm of the opinion that I think he's going to finish out his career with the Lakers, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you he is definitely going to do X, Y, or Z. That's the people who are willing to do that, those are the people who are lying to you, like flat out. If you ever hear somebody tell you, you know, LeBron is going to do X, Y, or Z, or I know LeBron is going to do X, Y, or Z, that person is lying to you, because unless that person is LeBron, nobody ever really seems to have a full idea of what LeBron is getting ready to do. All right. Next question here comes from @Bashir_1. Give us the Wiggins theory you kept to yourself and also your percent chance on how likely a move is to come before camp. All right. I would put the chances of a move at like 5%. I just don't see that happening. As far as the theory, all right, so I'm going to take you guys through a timeline here on the Wiggins rumors over the course of the summer. At basically the onset of the summer, I was told by a source I trust, like my most trusted source, that the Lakers and the Heat spoke about Andrew Wiggins, and that it was a little bit more than like, hey, you have Andrew Wiggins, that they had a back and forth, that it was a conversation that stretched over multiple exchanges, but it never got all that close, and Miami's price was too high. That was back around the time of the draft even. I forget when exactly I reported that, but that was earlier this summer. And then, you know, obviously that got aggregated like crazy, and Wiggins' name kept coming up over the course of the summer, kept getting asked about it, obviously, in these mailbags, and kept getting aggregated after I kept on saying the same thing. But the Lakers and the Heat, they kind of, they sat at the negotiating table. The Heat wouldn't come off of their price. The Lakers wouldn't meet that price, and it never got all that close. But I will say, I do believe the Lakers wanted Andrew Wiggins at one point this season. And I think the Lakers would still like to get Andrew Wiggins without giving up Rui Hachimura. I think that's probably, that might even be a higher priority to them than the 2030 one or two pick or whatever pick the Lakers can use. I think they would rather, because they need to add talent to this roster to take that next step. And it's hard to do that while also subtracting like your fifth or sixth best player. So, like if Miami was to ever go to the, you know, agree to, or come off of their stance of Rui and the first, and if they started that by saying, okay, fine, we won't take Rui. I think that conversation would escalate rather quickly, and we would see a move happen relatively quickly. But at that point, if you're in Miami, you're like, well, can I get a better offer from somebody else? You know, and they probably could. So, it's also tricky to execute a trade, you know, that doesn't have Rui in it, and get Wiggins because of how much money he's making. Anyway, so the, that was at the beginning of the summer. That noise kind of dissipated, as with all of the other noise involving, you know, player movement, that it always dissipates over the course of the summer. And everybody kind of goes on their vacations. And it was really weird recently to get this kind of like flurry of rumors all out of nowhere, where Mark Stein and Dan Wojcicki both in a matter of days report that the Lakers are now interested in Andrew Wiggins. And look, again, as I always say, Dan talks to different people than I talk to. Mark talks to different people than I talk to. And you hear different things from different people. Okay. But I just never bought that, like, the Lakers specifically did not want Wiggins earlier this summer and now do. That just doesn't make any sense to me, because the reasoning for it doesn't make any sense to me. This idea that like the Lakers didn't want Wiggins before because of Luka Doncic's extension, how that changed things as far as their view of a player like Andrew Wiggins. Okay, but he signed weeks ago. And the Lakers entered the offseason knowing that Luka was going to sign his extension. He signed the first day, in the first moments of that first day, that he could sign his extension. There was never any drama, any inclination from anybody I spoke to who said that anything other than, yeah, he's signing his extension. That's like, you know, as far, you know, as legally as it can be. A done deal. So, like that was that, I don't think that was ever a factor. And then the other reasoning for the Lakers reported, you know, change in stance on Andrew Wiggins specifically was that, well, the Lakers needed to see how Luka looked at Eurobasket. And it's like, huh? You needed Luka to play against Finland to tell you how good he is at basketball? That doesn't make any sense either. So to me, like as far as like, because the question, the original question or my original theory, as far as like why is it being reported that the Lakers didn't want Wiggins at the time? Look, I don't want to sound like I have, you know, I'm wearing a tinfoil hat or anything like that, but there are people within the walls at the Lakers facility who would like to disprove my reputation as a reporter completely. And if they can get somebody who is, you know, credible to say, oh yeah, that guy had it wrong, then they're going to float whatever information that they can to, you know, to that person to be able to discredit my reporting from earlier this summer. And it, like, it's fine, whatever, I don't care. I know I'm reputable. I know I'm credible. I know my shit. So like whatever efforts that are done on that front, like go for it. But the problem with doing that is that you wind up having to create a narrative that doesn't align with reality or the realities of the situation. The reality of the situation is they never thought that Luka wasn't signing his extension. So this idea that now that he has his extension signed, now they're interested in taking on longer term money, that doesn't make any sense. You knew he was going to sign it. It's pedantic. This idea that like Luka got in better shape and he looked good at Eurobasket, if you didn't think Luka Doncic was good enough at 27 as he's entering the peak of his powers, if you needed that to be proven to you that Luka is good at basketball, then you have much bigger problems than whether or not I know my shit. So like Bashir, like the reason I was hesitant to talk about this when I was originally going to talk about it was because I didn't want to put Jovan in an awkward spot while I talk about all that stuff. But yeah, like my theory is that the notion that the Lakers weren't interested in Wiggins when I reported it and are now interested in Wiggins, that to me felt like a shot across my bow, which, you know, fine. I ignored the cannonball as it flew over. All right. At Lakers fan BDA, is the idea of Andrew Wiggins better than his actual recent play on the court? That's a good question. That's an important question. I would probably say no. The idea, I actually think Wiggins is actually better recently better now than he has been recently. He had some weird situations going on with his family. You know, his dad was sick, according to rumors at the time. It was super weird that nobody actually reported on that situation when he just like stepped away from the team. And that like Bob Myers like thanked a bunch of people who were covering the Warriors at the time for not doing their jobs. Like, thanks guys for not reporting on this. And it's like, okay, all right. But the part of this, you know, trying to evaluate Wiggins now versus over the last couple of years, the Warriors just haven't been a very serious organization over the last couple of years, right? They had that two timeline thing that has completely blown up in their face. They've been kind of rudderless while, you know, Bob Myers is stepping down and Mike Dunleavy Jr. is like stepping in, and you have ownership that is a little bit too hands-on, and there's the Kirk Lacob thing where he has his inclinations as well. Like, it's just been kind of a mess in Golden State. And I don't think Wiggins is the kind of guy who like lifts a situation up on his own. So like, as we saw with him in Minnesota, right, that he's the first overall pick and was a very disappointing first overall pick because the Minnesota Timberwolves weren't a serious organization at the time. And Wiggins isn't the guy who is going to like be the tide that lifts all ships. That's just not really how he's wired. And so like when things went poorly, I think Wiggins' game is also going to slip there. And then you also add to the personal elements and the things that he was going through at the time. And then he goes to Miami, where they had just traded Jimmy Butler, and that was an entire mess. And their roster wasn't very good. And it was like, hey, man, come be like a version of Jimmy. And that's just not Wiggins, whether like as a basketball player or like as a person in a you know, a presence in the organization. That's just not really him. But what I will say is when the Warriors were a serious organization, when, like Darius made this point on LFR the other day, and I think it's a really important point. Darius lives up in the Bay and paid a lot closer attention to the Warriors than most of us have. And he alluded to Steve Kerr at one point saying that he knows what he's going to get from Wiggs. And it's like, that is not, based on the last couple of years, that's not what I would have anticipated a coach would say about Andrew Wiggins. But I really think it's just because the situations have been so shitty around him that it's like, yeah, I guess I'm just going to go along with how everybody is going along. And now this said, if the Lakers do trade for Andrew Wiggins, it does become all the more important that Luka and LeBron and JJ and everybody sets this culture to where Wiggins shows up and he's like, oh, it's go time again. All right, let's go. You know, because we even saw this from DeAndre Ayton at the beginning of his career when the Suns were a more serious organization. You know, he played winning basketball. So I think both Ayton and Wiggins are kind of wired in this way where it's like, if it's going good, they will compound how good it's going. If it's going poorly, they are not the kind of people to right the ship. And, you know, I that's a theory, but I feel pretty good about that. If the Lakers did trade for Wiggins and they set that culture and things were already going well, I think he would elevate the extent to which it would go well. Let's see. I asked for questions and at Dedudzin said no. Oh, well, made the show anyway, Dedudzin. Let's see if we have any more questions here from the live chat. Let's see. I hope I'm saying your name. Egidio Neto. Do you think Wiggins is for sure a better player slash fit than Dorian Finney-Smith? Yeah, because now look, ideally they would have Dorian and they would have Wiggins still. Like that would be great. Like the defense would be incredible if they were able to work that out somehow, some way. But like the whole reason that I am at all interested in Wiggins is foot speed. The Lakers need foot speed on the perimeter, and he is capable of guarding, you know, the Anthony Edwards of the world and the faster, smaller wings. Will it be your point of attack guy? Probably not. But you can in some stretches, if you're in a pinch. But for the most part, like the Lakers, the biggest hole I would argue on their roster is perimeter defenders, guys. And by also importantly, perimeter defenders who don't make your offense so much worse, right? Because you have Jared Vanderbilt who does go step in and help your defense, but he also wrecks your offense. So the Lakers need to find a way to employ a wing who makes their defense better, but doesn't wreck their offense. And, like Dorian was that, but he was that at like the 4-5 spot. And like the Lakers will miss him. Don't get me wrong. I will miss him. And I think they'll miss him in the locker room too. He was an important presence in the locker room. But as far as like basketball fit, I think Wiggins fits what the Lakers need more now than Dorian Finney-Smith would have. All right, let's go. All right, I think I'm going to. Okay, at Artie229 asks, why are all the big heads trying to defuse the Clippers scandal? The whole ESPN machine, Ramona Shams, even Zach Lowe said it'll be a slap on the wrist. Why are they so out of touch? ESPN's coverage of this story has been like wild. Wild. Shams Charania is like arguably the most plugged in person, you know, in the basketball information world. And all he has ever said to this point is it needs to be hardline evidence, which is false. And he's echoed Steve Ballmer's talking points. So I'm sorry, it feels like he's protecting people by not participating in the story. Ramona, right? Like she conducts that interview, and I thought she did push back a little bit, you know, with some of those questions. There were follow-ups, so it didn't feel just like, you know, pre-organized, you know, pre-written questions that Ballmer was ready for. But also, like, the information that she's given, just like, it's been wild how little information ESPN has added to the story. And now, like, part of that is that a traditional platform like ESPN, they need to confirm that kind of a story on their own before they can really kind of tack on information to it. So maybe like Baxter Holmes, who is, you know, arguably the best journalist in NBA media, let alone at ESPN, maybe he is doing his own digging. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But, you know, I think that rule of like, yeah, we can't just, you know, aggregate somebody else's report and then analyze it as if it's our own, especially a competitor. So like but at the same time, it has felt a lot like ESPN has been protecting the richest owner of a league that they just signed a lucrative, you know, deal with, right? And it kind of reminded me of back in the day with the NFL and ESPN, where like with CTE, right? How they talked about CTE and how they didn't talk about CTE and the type of voices that they had on their network at a time when CTE was like becoming a more and more and more important topic. Like, this has really kind of struck me that way with a lot of ESPN's coverage of the story, where it's like, all right, why are you pulling punches? What's the point? You know, and it might be an ethical thing where it's like, we can't ethically add on to the story without confirming it on our own. Now, I would argue like, all right, we'll get to work on on confirming it on your own so that you can report on it your own, you know, in your own way. But like over the weekend, the only thing that ESPN added was that the CEO of Aspiration, you know, said that the accusations and reporting from Pablo Torre is false. Like, okay, of course the fraudster politician is going to say that about his money laundering company, allegedly. You know, like that's the extent that, you know, you're going to add to anything to the story. It's just been weird. Like just frankly, it's been really, really weird. So especially in September, you know, like I was joking with Pete the other day. I was like, this is a perfect story because it's not going away anytime soon. It's going to get us through September, basically. It's a hilarious story. It's a team that we like to mock. Like, this was a gift from God. Pablo Torre, like, just dropped the perfect September story for us. Because like it's still developing, there's still new information coming out, and it's never not going to be funny how dumb the Clippers appear to have been while they were again allegedly circumventing the cap. Like, it's a really funny story, and it's the kind of thing that, like, if you're ESPN and you're trying to, you know, boost your September numbers at a downtime of the year, but you're doing so kind of half-heartedly, it's been really weird. It's been a really weird situation there. And the extents that I'm seeing people go low, I haven't really sensed it in the same way. I haven't listened to the last couple of episodes of Lowe's show, but like the extent that I'm, you know, the lengths that people are willing to go to continue to give the Clippers the benefit of the doubt when they've already won, they've already been caught doing this and fined for doing it. And two, the amount of evidence just continues to pile up. Like Mark Cuban is just, has been insane on this front. And now Cuban's a little different. Like Cuban was also loudly supportive of Donald Sterling when the league was getting ready to take Donald Sterling's team from him. And Cuban didn't want to see that. It was clear then that he was acting in his own, with his own interests in mind. And you know, maybe he's doing that again here now, seeing as he's still a minority owner in the Mavericks. So, but yeah, I don't know. I just think at the very, very least, the thing that even like anybody who is reluctant to get on the Clippers or Steve Ballmer's bad sign, the very least thing that you could possibly say is like, this looks really bad. And if this is true, the league needs to come down really, really hard on everybody involved for this, because this would now be the second time, let alone whatever information we eventually get. Because we know, you know, it's coming. Eventually, we're going to get information on the 2019 Kawhi decision there and what went into that. So, like, whenever that happens, and if this is proven to be true, you know, beyond or to the extent that, you know, this CBA kind of calls for, like even the Clippers' most ardent defenders who aren't their fans, they need to be able to acknowledge like, yeah, this looks bad. This looks really bad. And if it is as bad as it looks, then everybody there needs to be like, we need to be talking about an unprecedented punishment here. And like, from people that I've seen or heard, not even willing to go that far, it has made me kind of look at them like, why? What do you have to gain from this extent of benefit of the doubt? All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. I'm going to go out and cook up a steak and get myself ready for tonight's Vikings game. So Vikings, please don't embarrass me. The plan for this week, we have a loaded week. It is a Harrison week, I believe. I believe it's a Pete week this week. We are inching closer and closer and closer to training camp. So yeah, a lot going on here. So until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying, have a great rest of your week. Make somebody else's, no, your weekend. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.
Bye, everyone.